On this episode of Chicago Beer Pass, Nick and I have the guys from Sketchbook Brewing in Evanston on to talk about their new space and everything that they're doing during the stay-at-home orders in Illinois. All that and more on this week's episode. Here we are, hitting up events, drinking our way through Chicago beer, and trying not to miss a thing.
Yeah, because, you know, got a cork popped out, boom, it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
You know, all you have to do is add some fruit, stir it up, and ride that milkshake wave.
Whenever I see him, I got to take a photo with the most decorated brewer in Chicago, Jonathan Cutler.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. Every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw.
Sometimes you want a small beer, but really, you want a big beer.
You got to take in all those big aromatic hops.
Hey, what are you doing this weekend? Waiting in line for a bottle release?
Should have never been a fad. The black IPA is delicious.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we got two guests coming at us from their stay-at-home locations.
The return of Sketchbook. We got, who do we got? Now, we got Sean Curry, who we know. Hi, Sean Curry. And then we've got the brewmaster. We got Cesar. Is it Cesar Marone? Am I getting that right?
That's good enough.
How you guys doing, man?
Doing well. trying to stay level-headed and busy.
So last time we were up at your guys' space or to record the podcast, the new space was just getting built out, so we got a little preview of that, and now, you know, you guys have another new space that's in the works, so always making moves. This is exciting.
Yeah, it's been it's actually, in some ways, I think it's been a blessing on this hard times right now, because at least for me, I'm busy as I ever imagined to be, so, you know, getting up at 6-7 in the morning and going, getting the brew schedule going, talking to the guys at the brewery, going over to the construction site, making sure things are moving. So we've been, it's been going all right. Obviously, you know, the part that is not so good about all of this is that we had to shut down the tap room and just after we opened it. So we were seeing, you know, easily 150 to 180% increase in our sales of beer in the tap room, and then this came up. But we understand. I mean, I'm totally behind it. Even before we got shut down, we actually kind of huddled up one day and thought about, like, should we do this earlier? You know, because obviously we had music scheduled where the house was just getting creamed and getting, you know, so crazy with people, and then I think it helped to have a little bit of guidance from the government to say, like, you know, from the state, just close it. Right. Now, that said, we've been pretty blessed with our community here and others ordering a lot to go.
Mm-hmm. How has I know I'm drinking Sketchbook here. I picked that up
at the
store recently. I didn't make it all the way up to Evanston for it, but I know friends have been picking stuff up that live up there, so. How has the brew schedule, or like, has the schedule changed a lot from the amount of beer you're having to brew? Last time we had Eric Hobbs on, who doesn't brew but talks about like what they're doing, but knowing someone like how it's brewing and how that's affecting the schedule, like, love to hear like that. Like,
yeah, I would say, you know, if we are brewing almost as much as we were brewing last year. Now, that said, it's about 60% of what we would be brewing at this point in time.
Okay. Right?
Now, the reason there, kind of, if you think of the math there, is that, you know, we did increase our footprint. We're opening a new location. And so that those people drinking pints at the tap room, that's basically where the diminished returns is here. Our schedule changed a lot for the taproom people. We don't need three people at the taproom now. We're open. We ended up opening an extra day for deliveries and pickups. Okay. And it's been all right. Our biggest MO here was, let's try to keep everybody employed, keep all the paychecks rolling as much as we can. You know, try as much as possible. We already had a small crew anyway in a small brew house, which is came in handy at this time, right? It's a lot easier to make 14 barrels of a beer than 20 or 40 or 60 of a beer. So we've been hearing from some friends in the brewing industry. They're like, you know, their variety is dwindling because, well, they can't brew, you know, five times a week anymore. We're still keeping our schedule in the brew house. We're still keeping our schedule pretty busy. I would say about, you know, maybe 20-30% less, but using that time to do more maintenance and do other things. Like I had one of my guys today actually helping me grout tiles in the new location in Skokie.
Okay.
he learned something new from someone who just learned not too long ago.
For those keeping score at home, Sketchbook has a location in Evanston that was a very small tap room, an admired tap room. Everyone loved it. Super, super snug, right? They won some awards for design. They had just opened the space next door, right? Expanded. I don't know. I want to say maybe like double, triple the capacity, right? And then alongside that, pretty much, you announced that you're opening this production facility over in Skokie.
That's right. I was going to say, since you mentioned, you know, the very snug little tap room, social distancing was not an option. You were hugging everyone, whether you knew them or not, at, you know, the little Sketchbook location until you opened the, you know, expanded the next door up. Then you could actually distance yourself a little bit.
But yeah, the community up there, especially you guys had the CSA or not CSA, the CSB, right? And you already had that. So like you already had like such a strong community. So I'm sure it's really great to see all those people come out and support you, especially some people who might have been traveling for work and getting beer elsewhere are now like, oh, I'm at home. This is my spot. I want to make sure my locations, my breweries stay in business and here to support them, right?
Yeah. I've actually heard from other local breweries too that that's exactly what they're seeing. They're seeing their locals come back, you know, order a case, order, you know, 2 6 packs coming back every other day. And we're seeing something kind of similar, if not maybe even more so, just because of our location. You know, it's kind of, you know, people that are still going to work or, but I want to also give a shout out to the Guild, the Brewers Guild, you know, the Illinois Brewers Guild, Danielle and the crew over there, Katie. I mean, they did an outstanding job trying to get immediately when the shutdown happened, try to get some legislation opened up to allow deliveries. Right. Mm-hmm. We're not doing a ton of deliveries, but, you know, there are sometimes 5 or 6 a day. And then those are people that don't really necessarily feel comfortable leaving the house for whatever reason. They have a, you know, they just had a young child at home or they have an older parent at home. I think that's, you know, why we're essential.
Yeah.
You know, so
I'm all about the deliveries. Like, you know, why take that risk? Like I'll pay a little more and have it come here. And so it's a, exactly. I like that. We were talking to Hobbs about that delivery. What do you think the effects are when we do go back to some sort of normal, like that delivery thing? Is that going to stay, you think? Like people are going to kind of like it.
Yeah, like, right. Right. Yeah. Who knows? The Guild is ready to kind of bring back a bill that they were working on a couple years ago. They got pretty much squashed by the Retailers Association.
Okay.
While ago, it's a lot of complicated politics, the Guild decided to kind of like let that go for now because they were at the time because they were bigger fish to fry, but now that we're all of a sudden relaxed, you know, the state relaxed that rule, they're going to come back and, you know, they're already getting signatures from all of us. How much is that impacting our business? And obviously, right now, some breweries could say it's a large percentage of their sales.
Yeah,
the delivery. I hope that that changes. I hope that this helps to open up, you know, this sort of mystification of, oh my gosh, if people could deliver beer, then all of a sudden the retailers would suffer. You know, it's not really true because that already happens in wine, already happens in different states. It's just Illinois is one of those states where you can't ship beer or deliver beer.
And as stuff opens, you basically give another job. Like if you have those people who might be delivering now or might have been, you know, working the tap room or working, helping at the brew, like, all right, here's another job. Your delivery here.
Yeah.
So think that I've been lucky to jump in a few weekends here and there when deliveries need to happen. It's very interesting to see how people are handling this, this shelter at home. Like there's some people that are like, can you just drop it off outside my apartment building? And I'm like, no, I can't just leave alcohol outside. You got to show me an ID. And then, you know, I've had some people like holding a finger at the door, just trying to be as socially distant as possible. And when I've been out, I've been wearing a mask the whole time. And, you know, we're trying to make it as contactless as possible. So people are showing IDs through the windows and I wave at them like, cool, you're 21. Here it is. And then you walk away and they're, you know, people that come out to the door, they're like, thank you so much for doing this. Like they're having those hardships where they can't get out of their house because as Caesar mentioned, their family just doesn't allow them to get out as readily as possible to do it. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Nick.
Now guys, the Skokie location. Now I want to say you guys were brewing in Evanston, but then you're also brewing down at, I want to say, Great Central, right? I think some of the core stuff was brewed down there. How will the setup in Skokie compare to what you're able to produce with the Great Central setup?
So, yeah, just for kind of give everybody a kind of refresher on the Skokie location. So we are currently, have been for the past 5 years, operating out of basically an 1,800 square foot brewery space in Evanston. That's the brewery in the back. The tap room is a separate space, obviously. I mean, same building, but separate space. The building we found is about 16,000 square feet, of which about 13,000 is production. So it's a huge, huge improvement. It's an eightfold, if not more. And we're putting a 20-barrel brew house in there, built by QTS. Those guys actually there on site today. They're bringing the tanks in the brew house next week. So it's a modest increase in the actual ability to brew on a single day. We're going to go from 7 to 20. But overall, it's going to allow us to brew easily, 8,000 barrels a year. And when last year we were at about 2,700.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not crazy. You know, we're not going nuts and say like, oh yeah, you know, cause we all know where the craft industry is. I mean, there's over 8,000 breweries out there. Hopefully many will survive this. Customers are going for more local and local. So we kind of strive on variety, different beers, different flavors and you know, freshness. So we didn't want to go too crazy on getting a 50 barrel system like Great Central has. And the cost is also kind of prohibitive. So that's basically, I hope, Nick, I'm answering that question. Basically what it's going to allow us to do, you know, more space to put more tanks. We're actually bringing a lot of our smaller, well, our biggest tanks in Evanston will become our smallest tanks in Skokie, our 20. So we can still do small batches, if you will. But overall, it's gonna basically be a better quality of life for our brewers, for our staff, because we'll be able to work on a much better piece of equipment.
So you won't have any brewing equipment then in the Evanston space anymore?
I'm glad you touched on that. We will.
Oh.
There is a couple of reasons for that. One is we have a 10-year lease. We're paying for the space. Two, it costs more to remove the equipment than to keep it. Actually, there's several reasons. Three, we need to keep a brewery there to be able to have a tap room in Evanston. We can't just have there's no bars in Evanston. So if we took the brewery out of there, we would essentially have no other recourse, no other licensees in Evanston to operate. We would basically dismantle. So it makes no sense. One of my, you know, I guess, I don't know how to put it, but one of the things I've always wanted to do is to actually be able to do a wild fermentation, like slow, you know, wild yeast, wild beers. Obviously that's, we can't, you know, operate a brewery that needs to get beer out and do that. For one reason, others is the microbial kind of differences in the brew house. So we're going to turn that brewery into essentially a wild ale, brewery, where, you know, we brew there as much as we need and come up with really cool projects, maybe get people trained over there, you know, brew beers that are going to be 50-month fermentation in barrels and foeders and kind of leave it because we don't need that space to brew every day to get a lot of beer out. So that's the point.
So, Nick, you were kind of wondering, like, so the new space basically allows you guys to leave Great Central, right? That's the...
Yeah, correct, yes. I mean, they've been great at giving us exactly what their business model is, right? Help smaller breweries to kind of get the product in the market, you know, and at some point, you know, bring it all back out. Yeah.
That's cool. I don't know. When do you hope to be up and going in that space?
So it looks like we could be brewing our first batch in June. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So, I mean, pretty soon. I mean, it's been going for a little while, but yeah, it's happening pretty quick now. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. I think the last time that you guys were, when you were last at the brewery, we were just about to open up the expansion of the tap room. We had just given you a little bit of a teaser that Skokie was about to happen. I don't even know if we had announced that we were moving over to Skokie yet. We were talking about another space, and I think you guys thought Sean Decker was referring to the tap room space, and we were like, no, it's like a whole another space coming together. But the one of the, I know that Caesar, one of the big things Caesar is like, he likes to have his hands in the whole thing, and he's excited about having it all being back in house. That was some of the fun in the very beginning, is having it all in house and we're able to see the whole process going on. So being able to bring everything back underneath, you know, the brewer's hands within Sketchbook is an exciting thing for the business overall.
Yeah. And I think Skokie borders Evanston to the west, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Right?
Yep. Were there other places that kind of made the final list that weren't Skokie? I think this is Skokie's first brewery.
It is, yeah. I know. That's very exciting. They are – the Skokie economic development team they're uber excited. We actually – after we signed the lease and we were starting to, you know, get things moving, we were flooded with their requests and just meetings and stuff, and we had to, like, okay, step back, you know. let's actually get something going in the building first. We did. It took about 2 years actually to find a location. I mean, we didn't need it immediately. We had our location in Evanston. We had Great Central, Church Street first, and then Great Central Brewing on contract for us. So we're busy, we started looking, and it turns out that it's very hard to find a building that has the high ceilings that a brewery needs. It's an open sort of shell, and it's not more than 10,000-15,000 square feet. Evanston doesn't have any of those. At least that doesn't cost an arm and a leg. Chicago has a bunch. We also, one of our criteria was to kind of stay close by, because we didn't want to create a new space that was run and managed by a completely different set of people. That would, I firmly believe that would actually dilute our brand. It would be two different products, you know, coming from two different places. That wasn't the intent. So we wanted to stay within, like, you know, 5 miles or so, half an hour driving at most. So we did find a space, in Lincolnwood, that was, didn't work out. You know, we were looking at it. It was actually the same space that Beguile, was looking at a while ago.
Oh yeah.
They were same area, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, because their big thing was we don't have a dock, so we need a dock. So we're moving.
You know it exactly. Yeah. Well, they did. They had an area with like six, you know, dock for six trucks, but that wasn't something we could use. And they're like, yeah, that doesn't help. And then we found a place in Skokie, and a place in Skokie that we were a little too slow for it, and then somebody else snagged it, and then we found this one through our broker. Number one, if anybody's looking for a building for commercial use, it was actually a tip that one of my wife's uncles, who's in big business, he said, do you have a broker? I said, oh, no. I was like, well, get one now. And then he gave me a number, and I called the guy, and I said, okay, you're hired. Anyway, it didn't cost anything up front, you know, because the landlord's paying for it. We're paying for it in our rent. But these guys were amazing, and they just looked for what we needed. And, you know, we didn't have to be on the phone and on the web all the time. We just kind of got fed information. The space that we found was not even in the market.
Oh, nice. Okay.
He just knew a guy who worked for him before, who was now the building owner's broker. And they're like, yeah, you know, the owner may actually, you know, rent this building for the right person. Now, it's funny how this all circles around. I just mentioned the Guile, right? One of the buildings we looked at. The one that we're in now was where Arcade was going to be.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I even got a set of like drawings from the city, like, you know, just kind of crude drawings, and it was really, it's kind of almost like, you know, it's meant to be a brewery anyway.
Man, if Arcade might have had what, maybe six more months before Ale Syndicate messed that up.
Yeah. If it was 6 months earlier, Arcade would have been there. Yeah.
That's why.
The brewery Arcade. I get it.
Oh,
now.
You're trying. Yeah. Oh, okay.
It wasn't going to be a giant arcade, Nick. I'm sorry. You would have been coming up to Evanston, Skokie, a lot more often. Video game.
You know, NFL Blitz. You know, more video games than ping pong. I mean, what do you call it? Pinball.
Pinball.
Yeah, pinball. That's how. Emporium lost me with that. Emporium number two. Too many pinballs. Just straight up arcade games. I'm in.
Yeah.
Even Emporium number one is all pool tables now.
That's not bullshit. Now, Caesar, we were in Evanston, right before you built out the expanded space. You know, Sean was there. We met the other partner. I want to say his name was Sean too.
Yes.
But we didn't really get to hang out with you and know your story. So you, where were you before Sketchbook started? Like, is this your first project? This is your first brewery project?
Yes, Sketchbook is the first brewery project. Before that, I was a software engineer. Yeah,
right on. And then I think my understanding is that you entered the contest for the Long Shot, right, with Sam Adams.
That's
And won, right?
2013. Yes.
Can you take us back to that, man? Like, what would you do? Did you go to Boston? Did they come here? Like, how did it all play out after you found out you won?
Oh well, after I found that I won, I mean, It was kind of surreal, and actually, I'm gonna walk here. I might find a bottle still.
Oh, dude, I've got some in my house. So
you've got some in your house too.
I can shoot them a photo of it.
It's funny how they didn't explode yet. That means they do a good job. Yeah,
I've had mine sitting on my furnace, and it still hasn't blown.
So there's a six pack.
Oh wow!
Right there, and. There, I opened this to drink someday. But...
And I mean, you gotta keep it, man.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I still have eight of those at my house.
There you go.
Yeah.
So for the audio listeners, he was showing us the long shot bottles.
Yeah. The long and short of that was that I got a call one day. I was working in my basement, remote, you know, as a remote manager for a software company, and. This person said, hey, you just, you know, you were being selected for the semifinals of the Long Shot. And I was like, whoa, you know, that's awesome. And hung up after she said she needed six more samples, you know, six more bottles for the final. I went upstairs, had lunch with the kids and my wife, and I told them. And then as I'm telling Amy, I'm like, holy crap, I don't have any more. I had just given the rest of that keg to a party, I forgot now, and then sent some of the bottles to the Indiana State Fair competition. So I was just like, and I went, like, you know, really happy to, like, really kind of like, this sucks now. So I was able to actually contact the guy from the State Fair and have him pull the I think it was three bottles that I shipped to them, and I drove down there, picked it up, and I mailed it to Boston and made it in.
Oh, wow.
No, it was a good, I mean, they kind of slowed, I think they scaled back the Long Shot. It's a different format now, but for a couple of years after I won, We kept really good contact. Every time I go to Boston, I try to stop by. They now have a tap room as of, I think, 2019. And actually, it was funny. I sat down and they picked my brain for a few things because, here's one of the oldest, not oldest, but a pretty old craft brewery in the United States, the largest by some that, people don't even believe they are craft anymore because they're so huge. And they're like here, making their first foray into a tap room in 2018. But yeah, we've kept a pretty decent contact.
That's
No, it's interesting to just hear about their connection to Chicago. I think we had the Bulldog guys on.
Yeah, that's what.
They won an award. I think it was a joint, like Sam Adams and a Dogfish Award. And then we know you have a connection to them. But then outside of those stories, we, like you said, they're so big that we never really talk about them, even though we've all had it. We all know about it. So, yeah.
That was cool. You sort of like push off Sam Adams and a lot of the beer is pretty damn good. You're just kind of like, oh, it's always there. It's just like, whatever.
Absolutely right.
That's cool. So Sean, the stay at home thing has probably been pretty hard for you. You're always at like four different places on any given day, updating Untappd.
I am a social butterfly. Yes. I was just mentioning this the other day. I'm getting sick and tired of the bouncer at my house kicking me out after a certain amount of drinks. The cleanup crew is not as good. I ended up having to do all my dishes at the end of the night. It's been interesting. This actually has been really, really good for me because, by trade. So Nick and I used to see each other all the time in line over at the Merchandise Mart. I used to practice chiropractic down in the city. And I left last August to open up my own practice up here in Evanston, actually right around the corner from the tap room and like four blocks from my house. And I literally opened up this place a week before the shutdown happened. So everybody's been like, oh my God, it's not the time to open up a new business, but, like beer, healthcare is essential. And, I've been fortunate enough to stay open and I've had a following of people from Chicago come contact me here in the office once they found out I was open up. It's allowed me to see Caesar a little bit more frequently. In my downtime, in the very beginning, I was going over and helping out as much as I could or just hanging out as much as I could because I didn't like sitting at home by myself. And I figured I can help out as the little places that I could. It kind of reminded me back when we first opened up in 2014 that it was just us families that were doing everything for the brewery. So it was like being able to see everybody. But I do miss the social aspect. I miss bumping into friends. I miss going places. I miss being able to talk to random strangers and enjoy a conversation over a pint. I miss how noisy the tap room was. It's very quiet now. So it's just like for anybody else, I'm sure it's a challenge to try to do stuff. I think the last place that I went out to interact with people with beer friends was when we were at Pilot Project.
Oh, wow.
Doing that recording because I had to hunker down and really focus on opening up this place because, Caesar kind of alluded, he's about to make a comment about construction. I had a lot of stuff I had to manage about construction with this other venture. So a lot of self retrospect, introspection, trying to figure out what's going on with this next venture, but it's been fun. I've been able to help out a lot of people in the interim while people are looking for something to get out and do. I'm glad that I can stay open for that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I've got, luckily I've got the tap room around the corner. So at lunch I can walk over there and see how they're doing and, check in, see if on weekends when I'm free, if I can do deliveries and help them out. And, if not, then I buy a four pack and I go back to my house and wait till the bouncer kicks me out again.
How's your pastry ale from beautiful Itasca, Illinois there?
Say that again?
How's your pastry? What is it? A golden pastry?
Cupcake.
Oh yeah. Cupcake. So I'm sitting here in my office today, and the owner of Foreign Exchange out in Aurora, he's like, "Hey, are you at the brewery?" I'm like, "No, I'm at my office." And he goes, "Where?" I'm like, "Right around the corner from the brewery." He's like, "I've got some beer for you." And so he came in for a little beatish. He came in and dropped off this Small Cakes Peach, which is a collaboration. It's kind of a pastry stout. It's called Small Cakes because they did it in collaboration with a bakery or a cupcakery out there. And it's a peach cupcake beer. It's good. It's got that peach aroma. The hops give a little bit of a sweetness, bubblegummy icing type flavor. So it's tasty.
Nick, didn't we recently have something from Foreign Exchange, or we were talking about them?
Kitty Wampus.
Yeah, Kitty Wampus, man. I think
I was supposed to get a can of that. Yeah, I was supposed to get a can of the maple version of Kitty Wampus, but one of the local beer buyers here in Evanston randomly asked about it, and the owner is like, "Yeah, I do have one." And then he comes into my office, like, "Gave away your maple Kitty Wampus to the Evanston First Liquors guy because he is bringing on a new product." So I was like, "That's okay. I'll be able to have it."
You know, little nerdy beer offering from some random crew that you just kind of like, yeah, you happen to know about. That's always fun.
Yeah, right? It's totally. Somebody randomly drops into your office and goes, "Hey, I got some beer for you." And I'm like, "Ah, it feels like downtown again."
Now at Sketchbook, man, what was the first beer you guys brewed in Evanston? And then what's the beer you guys have been brewing the most lately?
So you're making me reach deep into my memory here. Usually it doesn't work that way. But I do remember today. We were trying to make a session pale ale. It turned into an IPA because
Primo.
Scaling, yeah. We called it Primo. It was pretty tasty, sold pretty fast, and then we could never replicate that. We just fixed what we needed to fix to brew the right beers. So that kind of answers your question, but doesn't really. We didn't. And that's kind of like, brewers that are either scaling up or starting new, they kind of see that happening. I mean, maybe a little less these days because consumers are a little more open to trying new things. So you just, as long as it's good, it doesn't have to be exactly what you meant to be at first. But what we're brewing the most now, I mean, especially this last month and a half or so, the distributors don't want to really take too much risk into new things. It's kind of interesting. I could actually, just to kind of not trying to derail the conversation here, but I just heard a podcast with Larry Bell, and he was talking about how people are, we're all comfort creatures. We're going to go back to what we like, whether it's a style or just an idea or just, so the experimentation is going to be less. Now, maybe it's not true for everyone, for sure. So, but we are seeing that with Orange Door and Sufficient Clearance. Those are the two that are that are continuing to be, if not even more, being the beers that we're brewing the most and that we're selling the most out of the tap room, and then for those who don't like hoppy beers, then it kind of defaults to Amistosa, the Mexican lager.
Yeah.
If we don't have it, when we have it, kind of flies off the shelf. We opened when we were able to get growlers again. We kind of made a push on the growler sales just to get our beer from the draft, draft beer out.
Yeah.
We saw what we've never seen in our lives in terms of growler sales. I think one weekend was like almost 300 growlers. I'm talking like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It was just our staff was like, if this ever happens again, we need a dedicated growler filling person. So
that's actually one of the things that I know when I see the comments and from the staff. Like we've actually had to put a big push out to ask people to bring the growlers back. One of the things that we've been doing in the tap room is that we've been giving growlers. Not charging the money for the growlers, just on the honor system that people will bring growlers back. And then the growler sales became so popular that we were worried that we weren't going to have enough growlers to be able to fulfill all orders. And so we started putting a push out to say, hey, we've been wishing that you guys would bring these back. And then we got a flood of growlers coming in. And that was my one of the, with this whole shutdown. Now everybody's doing a pivot to delivery sales and to go sales, that cans and growler, like glass and cans, are going to become a short supply for mm-hmm. breweries that are trying to get this supply to make sure that their packaged beer is out there for the people. Mm-hmm. That was one of my bigger concerns when I saw this whole thing happening, that there just wasn't going to be enough local supply for both those containers for people to be able to capture it for their customers. Yeah. So it says knows a lot better than I do. I've just seen what happens when I'm in there picking up deliveries and going back, and they're like, can you get more growlers from your house? I'm like, yeah, I've got a bunch of sketchbook growlers in my house, and we clean them and sanitize them and disinfect them and mm-hmm. able to bring them back into the market. But it's tough.
I think, a lot of this is, I don't know. It's hard to tell, because obviously I don't condone any kind of hoarding of anything just because, but also kind of anticipating, the whole supply chain, that we have in the country, a lot of other developed countries, it's very sensitive. I shouldn't say it's wrong. It's just very sensitive. Most of the stuff we get is from one place. And if that place shuts down because of, COVID-19, well, guess what? Then you don't get that. And you don't even know where to go after that. So perhaps because of our small size, nimbleness, always looking for, always looking for either a, good price or lower volumes, that we can't really use big suppliers. We always had, three or four suppliers of growlers and three or four suppliers of cans. And those relationships, never burning bridges, very important. Those relationships kind of helped out. We were able to actually, because we order glasses from one supplier and the growlers from another supplier. So when we couldn't get the growlers from the supplier, we get growlers. We went to the guys we ordered glasses from, our pint glasses, and said, "Do you have any?" "Yes, I do." "Okay, send us two pallets." And so that's kind of kept us going. And that's super, super important. Just keeping those relationships going.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say like this pushback to like comfort, beers or whatever, because we were seeing this a little bit in the beer nerd circle of like, oh, we want lagers, and like that was starting to make a comeback. But now that everyone's at home, everyone is sort of like being like, oh, I want those movies or that music that I like, oh, that beer, that like I want Oreos, like you just want the stuff that you like feel safe with. So yeah, it's kind of,
I think that's exactly right, stuff you feel safe with. Yeah.
So that like lack of or the not the need for as much experimentation probably in the next year is it's kind of interesting to think about. Like we just gotta make what we like, and let's get past this kind of thing.
True. I think this is the second time we've had Sketchbook on the show. So, and we drink the beer, right? Even like when we're not having the Sketchbook episode, Brad always hunts down some Sketchbook beer. Has there been any talk about but partnering with other Evanston breweries and offering like a collective package and then having that as a delivery option? I'm starting to see that a little bit out in certain pockets, and I'm wondering if that's like a feasible thing, or is that more of a one-off thing for breweries from you guys' perspective?
I don't know. It's news to me. It's also because Evanston is not, people in Evanston might say like, whoa, we have four breweries, two breweries and two brew pubs. It's still very small for a town of 80,000 people in terms of number, right? I mean, Chicago has, 100, more than 100. But I can see that as a possibility, so it's yeah.
Who's doing that, Nick?
I saw it was, I want to say it was, Microphone and Maplewood. You went to Maplewood, it was more like a guest where you could just buy Maplewood stuff. I'm sorry, Microphone stuff there. And then down in, Tinley, where, I think it's like Sound Growler and, Hailstorm and, the third one always escapes me, but there's three down there.
350.
Yeah. So they're all getting together saying, hey, you can try all three of us at once.
That's interesting, because speaking of legislation, what makes that possible is the fact that not that long ago, the guild was able to get a bill sort of pushed forward and passed in Illinois to allow guest beer to be sold on a brewery, right? So we can sell, you know, we could sell one of these guys' brewery. We could go across and say, like, you know, hey, you know, Temperance, you want to put your beer here? I think it's also related to where breweries are. You know, the other breweries we talked about, they're a little more farther in the suburbs one way or another than we are here. So maybe that need is a little less. You know, somebody can actually hit us, Temperance, Beguile, right. all those places. But what we are seeing is we are selling right now. I don't know if you guys know about kombucha maker here in Evanston called Kombucha Brava. It's actually very good. They're very tiny. I don't know their plans for expansion, but we are selling about, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is a lot. We're selling like at least 2 kegs a week in growlers for people that are just buying to go.
And that's hard kombucha, not...
No, just kombucha.
Just straight kombucha. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like it's a different option than the tap room for people that don't drink. The other thing that we've been selling in the tap room before was the special effects from Brooklyn, their non-alcoholic beer, which I personally think is one of the better tasting non-alcoholic beers that are on the market right now. But this is kind of what you're able to bring in, sell other breweries beers. It's been an option. I'm sure there's people that are super excited about it because they are at home and they don't drink, and they're like, well, how do I do this? So being able to sell the growlers for that helps that section of the market out as well.
Mm-hmm. I could see those breweries, especially out in the middle of nowhere, like the Metal Monkeys, like no, you need other people's stuff to kind of hey, we have those, other people have ours.
Very challenging for them.
Yeah. Cool.
Now, when's the last time you guys went to that little, there's like this little Mexican joint in like Winnetka where you guys like set up a small brewery or something? I think that's what we talked about when we were devastated, man. When was the last time you guys went up there, man?
Oh, you're talking about Depo Nuevo. D-licked beer. So what it was is that Dan was part of the homebrew club here in Evanston, and he, you know, his career is that he was a retailer or a he worked for windmill farm. Like, he would develop windmill farms and farmlands and stuff like that. So big giant windmills to set up electrical engineering, but he always had this passion for brewing beer. And so he was coming over, and he was brewing, getting wort, brewed at Sketchbook for a little bit, before he got his brewery set up in the basement of Depo Nuevo. And they're actually doing really well. I think that he's been commenting on his post that he's been selling out of beer, because Depo Nuevo, they're packaging it in and selling it with their meals that they're going out. So they've got meal specials that people are doing pickup and to go. And so he had 3 different beer releases last week or in the last couple of weeks, which is great. I mean, he's been able to stay on top of it too. One of the, you know, in the being in the suburbs and kind of with it, when you're saying about the breweries that are here in Evanston, how they're supporting each other. Evanston has made a real, the residents and the city of Evanston, especially the main Dempster Mile in around where we're part of the businesses, these business social media groups are making a big push to help keep the small businesses open. So, you know, you got Evanston, you know, there's a Support Evanston Restaurant group in on Facebook. So everybody's talking about what restaurants are doing, what deals, and where can you get stuff, and what's going on. And you know, there's been a few pop-ups of like what breweries are delivering and how can I get stuff at my house, or what can I go and get that's contactless. So the city has been making a really big push so that these small businesses don't end up closing after this whole entire pandemic goes on. And I know that's one of the bigger fears. I was messaging with Brad about a couple of places that announced this week that were shutting down because they couldn't pivot for their business model.
You mentioned Lynx.
So Lynx Tap Room shut down completely. They're moving away from Milwaukee Avenue. They have no idea what they're doing. I was reading their Facebook post, and they said something about something on wheels and stuff like that, and sausages. So my guess is that they're going to move to a food truck type of component that they're going to scale down. But they said that they're closing down their Milwaukee place, Crown Liquors, which I guess has been a was a liquor store and then pivoted more towards having the two bars, and we're completely relying on their cocktail program and their draft sales, and couldn't with it with how things are, they couldn't pivot to supply their customers, and so they're shutting down completely. We've got the news that you guys were mentioning it last time that Argus is shut down. So they're closing. I'm concerned about a lot of people that I don't know how it is in Chicago with the delivery component. The one that I see the most is Clint over at Lake Effect. That he's pivoted pretty well by teaming up with local restaurants and creating these collaboration meals that he is selling his beer, and then that restaurant comes in and has prepackaged food to go, I believe. Not 100% sure on that, but he's been looking at local restaurants around him, that how can he help them out by helping push this out to his community as well when he's putting up his social media posts, which is good. But I'm really, really, opening up a business right before this all started. Like, I'm really concerned about people that don't know, can't shift their mindset about, or don't have a business model that allows them to shift, that to allow them to stay open during this whole process.
Yeah, I think that's a big fear. Like, how does a brewery like something like or a tap room like the Links or any place that sells a lot of beer, or is a big space like a venue or music space, like that's just, you're gonna be out of commission for so long, and if you can't figure out how to make it work, that rent in Chicago in some of these neighborhoods is just ridiculous.
I'm concerned about these places that open up with like 120 different taps. Not only for their business, but what happens with all those kegs that are sitting there for these 4 or 5 months? Mm-hmm. I can't wait for the untapped reviews for the 4-month-old keg of fresh IPA.
Keg condition. You're going to see the descriptor change to a keg condition.
Keg.
It's a drop out.
We froze it before we got to this whole thing. It's safe.
It's awesome to hear that you guys are doing so well, and you know the projects are moving forward, and you've been able to pivot and you know make it work because being so nimble and you know almost being this like family has been, you've been able to come together and just like make it happen. So it's cool to hear.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see when we are able to reopen, all of us, right? Restaurants, any businesses, tap rooms, because I think it'll happen, of course, but it'll be a slow kind of progression towards normalcy, you know, and we'll have to adapt to that. You know, we'll have to adapt to, you know, people's reactions, you know, how they feel, and be mindful of that. And then, you know, basically to all of them, our wholesalers, our restaurants and bars, and our customers directly on the tap room. Like, you know, what can I do for you that makes you feel comfortable to be here or to have our product?
I really hope when places start to open up and open up at a smaller capacity, I really hope that people start wearing masks. Like, I mean, people who come into the joint are not, and 60% are probably not wearing masks. But the folks who run these joints, I think they can kind of influence what the public does if you walk into the joint and those people are wearing masks, right?
Yep.
And I'm not even saying a mask is like the be all end all, but it's a start, right? It's a start.
It's definitely a start. I mean, one of the things that Sketchbook did is we put a sanitizer pump in the very front door. So when this all started, we got sanitizer pumps so that people can sanitize their hands when they're coming in. And then we pivoted to all the staff were wearing masks and rubber gloves while they were serving and doing everything. And then we pivoted to only one person in the tap room to pick up your order at a time. And now it's, you know, it's like now the city of Evanston is required, like most of the northern suburbs around us have pivoted. If you're going into an essential business, you have to wear, people who are working at the essential business and people are coming in to be at that business have to wear masks for our town. So a little bit different than I think the city of Chicago hasn't required masks to be mandated. And that was because the communities around us had pivoted to that component of wearing masks to keep there. And we have a lot of overlap of people coming from like Highland Park and Northbrook and Skokie and Wilmette. They had already made that decision, so we made the same decision here. So if anybody's coming in, they can't come into the tap room unless they have a mask on. So, yeah, so it's going to be a new normal. Yeah, it's gonna, there's an evolution and extinction of different things that are going to happen going forward from 2020, that there's old practices that aren't going to be around anymore, and there's new practices that are going to come about that's going to be able to do it. And yeah, as Brad was saying, it's the business ability to pivot towards that is what's going to keep them busy and accommodate for that. We're going to have to make beer that comes as fog so we can just breathe it through our masks. Right. And not have to take them off.
The first person that comes out with a mask you can drink from. That's where.
Wait, are we straws now?
Straws. Straws. Drink your beer. Drink your thing through the straw.
Well, cool. Right. Well, great, guys. Thanks for joining us. Where can people, I guess, find out about new releases or what's happening with the tap or the build out and all that? What's the best place to keep up?
Facebook's still pretty strong. Our newsletter, if people haven't signed up, they can find out about that on our website, sketchbookbrewing.com. And we're trying to keep people up there. We also have been hosting Zoom happy hours and meetings once every couple of weeks. And they've been kind of successful. I must say it's not my thing. I like to be there and talk to people. I join once in a while, you know, my wife does, and Alice and Sean Decker are great at that. And it's been kind of interesting to see that. So yeah, people are joining in once in a while. So keep an eye on those channels. Yeah.
Cool. And how about you, Nick? Where can people keep up with what you're doing?
Where am I, man? I'm on Twitter at Nicosio.
And I'm on Twitter at BRad. We got lots of episodes coming out from Chicago Beer Pass. We got the Eric Hobbs one, should be up in the next day. This one, I got some other ones coming up, Phil McFarlane and Brian Shimko, and you know, lots of stuff in the works, so it should be good. Lots it's of good beer to drink, come. Lots of beer. Yeah. Well,
good to see people, man.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for listening, and cheers.
Cheers, yeah. Thanks, guys.